there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This episode is brought to you by Captain Morgan Sliced. Since the dawn of bread, people have known the truth. Sliced is better. That's why new Captain Morgan Sliced went all in on four bold, deliciously sliced cocktail-style flavors. Pineapple Daiquiri, Strawberry Margarita, Mango Mai Tai, and Passion Fruit Hurricane. Visit CaptainMorgan.com to find Sliced near you. Does not contain real fruit or juice. Captain Morgan & Co., Plainfield, Illinois. Please drink responsibly. 21 plus only.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's the Smuckers Uncrustables podcast with your host, Uncrustables. Okay, today's guest is rough around the edges. Please welcome Crust.
Thanks for having me.
Today's topic, he's round with soft pillowy bread.
Hey.
Filled with delicious PB&J.
Are you talking about yourself?
And you can take him anywhere.
Why'd you invite?
And we are out of time.
Are you really cutting me off?
Uncrustables are the best part of the sandwich. Sorry, Crust.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz. David Ortiz. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. I am your host for today, Keaton DeRosier, normally here with Jake Devereaux. He is out right now, welcoming in the birth of his first child. Congrats to Jake. So joining me on this wonderful episode, this first half All-Star Break episode, is a voice that should sound familiar to you folks. Listen to the Red Sox on Deck podcast, Bob Osgood, stepping in for Jake. Thanks for joining, Bob.
Ready to go. Calling in the right-hander. Thanks for the invite, Keaton.
Absolutely. And we're joined by a special guest that I'll let Bob introduce.
Yeah, we've got Kevin DiDomenico here, the announcer for the Salem Red Sox at Low A. Kevin, thanks for joining us, and welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me on. And name pronunciation there was flawless, so you killed it there.
Awesome. I've been practicing for 3 hours, so I'm glad I nailed that. Why don't you tell us, Kevin, kind of just about your path, you know, growing up, your experiences with broadcasting, if this was something that you always wanted to do, and how you got lined up with the Salem squad.
It's something I've wanted to do, I want to say, for 5-10 years now. I won a contest back when I was 10 years old. To announce on the Nationals radio with Dave Jagler and Charlie Slows. And ever since then, it's kind of been my passion. So I started my own broadcasting internet station in high school and did it throughout college, work on the ACC network, doing play-by-play for baseball, softball, lacrosse, you name it, plenty of Olympic sports. Was the voice of the Pulaski Yankees on the road back in 2019, New York Yankees Advanced Rookie Affiliate. And then, yeah, just doing as much as I can. Radford, home voice of their basketball team, men's and women's. And it's kind of been my passion for years now. So, yes, that is essentially what I do and how I got into it.
Yeah, that's great. And it's funny that you say that around 10 years old. That was about the age that I was interested in broadcasting, and I was doing some, you know, local youth basketball and things like that at that age. That was my plan, and then I was too much of a coward once I got to high school and college to follow through with that. So respect the hell out of what you're doing there. All right, Keaton, did you want to kind of start things off with some of the Salem players that we wanted to talk about today?
Yeah, let's start off with Gilberto Jimenez, one of the Red Sox top prospects, highest ranked prospect at Salem on most top prospect lists. Has really struggled hitting from the right side this season, though. He's only hitting 182 right-handed without a walk and striking out 39% of the time. However, from the left side, he's hitting 337 and only striking out 16% of the time. Have you seen anything in person that sticks out between Jimenez swinging from the left and right side?
Yeah, first of all, well-deserving of that high prospect rank in the Red Sox organization. He's a guy who has a great attitude and comes out to play every day. But looking at, you know, left versus right, it's obvious that the right-handed swing has more power. And I look back to a video that had his left-handed swing and his right-handed swing side by side, and he has that leg kick with his right-handed swing that that obviously brings more power, and I could see more projectability in the coming years and in upper levels, but the contact just hasn't been there this season. And from the left side, you know, it's a different game for him, right? So he's a guy that I think his speed translates to any level, right? So when he hits a ball hard, even to the left side of the infield, he has a good chance of beating the ball out, even to the right side. So I think that's why you see the improved average when he's hitting lefty. But definitely more power is there from the right side. But it's unlike every guys. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. His ability, his speed from the left side of the plate, when he lays down a bunt, I want to say it's 75% chance that he's getting down the line safely.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the reports, you know, as you mentioned, more power, but really was that it was kind of a plus swing from the right side compared to the left, that was preferred. And you know, you have less opportunities to face left-handed hitting. It's probably a quarter of the at-bats that he's had, so you got to give him some more time. But you know, is there any reason to think that he wouldn't switch hit for as long as he can? Probably, you know, give it another year or two at least. But do you have any reason to think that he might choose one side over the other at some point?
I think right now, guys, I think he has a small sample size, right? So I think he's a young guy. I think give him, like you said, 1 or 2 years to really discover that right-handed swing. Because, like you mentioned, his sample size is low, especially facing the amount of lefties he does face in low A. So I think you give him a year or two to develop that swing. I think there is success in that swing. But I think from the left side, he's just had so much success. And if it continues that way, that it's, you know, lefty heavy success, I could see him doing away with the right-handed swing. But again, give him time.
On the defensive side, how has he looked in center field? You mentioned his speed, which is, you know, clearly enough to play at the position. But what about the instincts, and what have you seen from him defensively?
You know, it's funny. He's not an everyday center fielder. So he'll play in right, I think, about half of the time. So Zidane Rafaela will be in center field a lot. Nick Decker's now back with the club. He will be in center field a good amount as well. So he's in center field about half the time when he's playing. His speed's obviously there. You see it more on the base paths, to be quite honest, and coming out of the box. Because Rafaela, I think, can track down a ball maybe better than anyone on this team. But in right, he's been solid. He's been really solid. But again, he's not your everyday center fielder in Salem. But his speed's obviously there.
Great. Yeah, thanks. That we've talked a good amount about Jimenez so far this year, so it's good to talk to someone who's got a closer look at him there. That's interesting about the bunting, you know, that he is on most of the time with that. He said what he does that more often from the left side, and has he been working that into his game more and more as the last year or two have gone on?
I haven't seen him bunt yet from the right side. But I think he just knows his speed from the left side. I think he knows his ability, and he plays to it a lot more on the left side, right? He can, you know, slap it over to the left side or to the left side of the infield. And even when he does pull it, when he's hitting lefty, he can almost beat it out. So I think that's, he's recognized, right, guys? He's recognized that part of his game and his ability to get on from that side.
Nick York has gotten off to a bit of a slow start this year, especially when making contact, except with striking out 17 times the first 45 at-bats, but since the start of June now is hitting .383 and only 15 strikeouts total in his past 25 games. Did you notice any adjustments or things from his slow start to now that you've just kind of seen him improve at, or is it just more of a talent getting used to the level and winning out?
Yeah, Keaton, that's a good question. I actually asked him this in our Sox Talks interview, and he told me, you know, there wasn't any adjustments he made. He said he was confident he would make, he would, you know, find success in what he was doing. So I think, you know, at a young age like that, you know, you've seen guys like Anthony Volpe, like even Derek Jeter struggle at that age. And when you're 18 years old playing in professional baseball, it's not easy. But I think he's been able to just fight through, you know, some of those demons adjusting to professional baseball. That it's been, you know, he's finally come into himself a little bit more, and you know, he's found a lot more success.
Yeah, and Kevin, it seemed like he really held his own both at the alternate site, the reports that we were hearing from there, and then he was invited to spring training, and you know, the couple of at bats that they gave him, he was working counts. I know that he laced a single into right field in one of the videos that I saw. So, you know, you saw the strikeouts early and some of the swing and miss. You know, it could have been just that year off, just not having consistent play since last March that I think a lot of players have dealt with. And I like you mentioned some of those names, but just the more reps that you get for everybody, it's just been such a strange past year and a half.
Yeah, I actually have talked to a couple scouts about this, and you can almost, for hitters, there's so much, you know, they haven't had that year of what, 500 at bats, right, to adjust to professional hitting. So talking to those scouts, it's like you can't really judge hitters, or you can't really judge position players like that that haven't had that year. So guys like Nick Northcutt, who's, you know, 21, 22 years of age, who came into the league and, you know, struggle a little bit maybe in Lowell, and you have that year off, it's tough to adjust again, and you're getting older, right? So it's hard to judge hitters, and you kind of have to give them time to adjust to the pitching and give them that time to have those at-bats. And Nick, I think, is, you know, a great example of coming around, especially here midway into the season, because a lot of young guys will taper off after a hot start. So he's an excellent example, and you know, making that jump is harder than a lot of people think. So it's really impressive.
Yeah. And, you know, defensively and on the base pass, he's 9 for 12 on steals so far this year, which is actually kind of a trend with a few of the players down there that we'll talk about in a bit. But how has he looked defensively and on the base pass to you?
Yeah, he's been solid defensively. I think he's 8 errors, 95% fielding percentage. So I think, he's been solid. Obviously not perfect, but you won't get that out of a 19-year-old kid. So he's been solid. Base path-wise, he's got speed, right? A lot of our guys have speed. So, he's been able to steal some bags when he gets on. Luke likes to do a lot of hit and runs, so we've seen that a lot of that from our guys, but when he gets on, he's definitely a threat.
You know, really my favorite pitching prospect in the organization that I was looking forward to seeing this year and hoping to make a leap was Aldo Ramirez, and he lived up to that hype, or at least my expectations or hopes for him in the early part of the season. He had a 2.03 ERA in 8 starts, and in the last 3 starts did not give up a run in any of them, and really seemed to be hitting a stride. I think he's 20 years old. Then reports of elbow tendonitis. Any kind of risk of serious injury that you've heard with Ramirez? Or are they just kind of playing it cautiously, I guess, is the first question before I get into how he looked this season.
Yeah, I know with injuries like these, they usually keep their cards pretty close to the vest. They kind of just share with me what the situation is, and don't tell me the seriousness of it or when he's coming back. Because I know that was the situation with Nick Decker. Just told me he had a groin injury and he'd be back. He's on a rehab stint, he'd be back. So, and now he is. And it's been a couple months. So I think with Aldo, they definitely don't want to rush him into anything at all. a young top pitching prospect like that, which is, you know, far and wide in the Red Sox organization. So I think with him right now, I don't know a whole lot about him. I know he's on the IL right now and he's struggling with that arm injury. So we'll see about him. I am not 100% on where he's going, but I can speak about how he's done so far this year.
Yeah, and you can understand why they would be cautious. You know, we've talked plenty about Brian Mata and Thad Ward, and then you've got Tanner Houck was down for a bit, and Connor Siebold and Bizzardo, and so many of these being arm injuries that you understand why they would play it cautiously. And we've kind of talked about, with all of those injuries, it was Aldo and it was Brian Bayo were really at the forefront of the healthy pitching prospects in the system, and now that's down to one. So hoping that Ramirez is okay. When he was healthy, you know, how did he seems like a command and control pitcher, and with the changeup was billed as his best secondary pitch. So how have you thought these pitches looked, his changeup, and how does his command look in person?
I think to your point too, like the Red Sox need starting pitching, young starting pitching. So he's definitely crucial in his development. So yeah, they are definitely not rushing him back. How he's looked, I will say our starting pitching has been solid. The high point of our season, I think, has been our relief pitching. Luke Montz talks a lot about how impressive that has been, just being able to shut down teams in the late innings. But with Aldo, I think he's been consistent. He's been he showed his stuff, right? So he's been a guy who, you know, his numbers don't show it, right? Again, another young guy, right? So you got to give him a chance to adjust. His numbers don't show it, but his stuff has been there. The fastball's been there. The changeup's been there, as you mentioned. And it's more flash than anything. He's been able to fool guys, and you can tell he's sometimes at another level than other starting pitchers or other relief pitchers are at. But you can definitely see his potential. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of time to look at him before the injury, but the numbers don't show it, but you can definitely see the projectability.
Nick Decker was a guy who I know that a lot of Red Sox fans were interested in keeping tabs on, and then last year had the wrist injury that really kind of dug into his playing time. You mentioned you also had a kind of injury now, but from when Nick Decker is on the field, what are you seeing from him, and is the, you know, Sox fans' excitement pretty justified?
Yeah, he's special. He's, again, I haven't seen him as much either. He went down pretty early in the season. A lot of left-handed power. You know, he's not a big guy, but he can bomb balls to the right field wall. I mean, it's super impressive what he can do. Speed, too. You know, he plays center field. He's got the speed similar to Rafaela. Not quite with Jimenez, but takes good tracks to the balls. So a lot of power from the left side. I think that's the most impressive thing, right? Because he doesn't have a big build, but yeah, he's able to spray the ball too, but a lot of power from the left-handed side.
The two pitchers that the Red Sox picked in the 2020 shortened draft are also there, Shane Johan and Jeremy Wu-Yellen. What have you seen from those two guys?
Two solid guys. Jeremy has been one of our top-end starters. Sometimes struggles with the arm side control, but that will come with time, right? Simple adjustments. The minor leagues are all about simple adjustments. Don't make any drastic adjustments, but guys who have the tools and you can adjust them a little bit, right? So I think with Jeremy, he's coming along well. Shane, you know, both lefties, the stuff's there. And I got to go back and look at their numbers, but I think their numbers are pretty solid. I know Wu-Yellen just had a rough outing a couple outings ago, so we're actually going to interview him on our Sox Talks episode coming up this week. So we'll talk to him a little bit more. But both solid guys, both guys that come from the left side. And, you know, our pitching has been a high point in our season so far. So I think there's a lot of guys you can look for that are not really on Red Sox fans' radar.
Yeah, and just to go along with that, Chi Young Liu came up recently, and I know that he's only made one start, but that's another name. I think that he started in the rookie ball, maybe for a start or two. He was reportedly throwing about 100 and then lost a lot of that velocity last year, and it sounded like that he was starting to get that back to the mid to upper 90s, I did see recently. I know it's only been one start. I'm not sure whether you even covered that game, but have you heard anything on Lou?
Little to nothing on him. Yeah, I do the home games, right? So we don't send a broadcaster on the road, and that started out. That's a COVID situation. So, yeah, I just do the home games. I did not see his start, no, but I'm excited to see him this this coming week.
Great. Moving on to the draft from this year now. Red Sox drafted Marcelo Meyer at number 4. Seemed like a bit of a surprise for him to be there, as there was a lot of other names linked to the Red Sox, and a lot of people figured he was going 1-1. Would you like to see him be assigned to Salem next spring?
Yeah. I assume he's going to be in the FCL for the remainder of this year. I don't think they'd bring him up to Salem this year, but I'd assume he'd start in Salem next spring. I'm high on this guy. I think there was the shortstop. There were so many shortstops in this draft. It was so deep.
Yeah.
And there was what I think I was last night. They were saying at least 5 or 6 guys could have gone number one. And it's all about, how much you're going to pay these guys, right? If you're going to sign for the slot value. So I think that definitely factored into a lot of, but this guy could have gone number one. So, I mean, I assume we'd see him in Salem next year. As he develops, but I'm really excited about this guy, and yeah.
I mean, I think that kind of took everybody by surprise. You looked at most of the scouting reports and then most of the mock drafts, and he was 1 or 2 across the board. And a lot on our preview shows the last couple of weeks, we didn't say a whole lot, if anything, about Meyer because it just didn't seem like he would be there. So I think it was pretty surprising to everybody.
Once Leiter was gone, I thought it was going to be Lawler. I thought the Red Sox were going to try to get Lawler.
Yeah, it was the Job was kind of the curveball, and that's your guy, Keaton. So I'm sure you weren't surprised.
Well, I was kind of surprised, but over the last couple weeks leading up to the draft, the Tigers were linked to Job like extensively. They were very into him, so that part didn't surprise me. I guess initially because. I don't remember when it was that you had me on the Sox on Deck pod, but I talked about Job as like a potential reach for the Red Sox at number 4 because he was projected to be more of like a mid-round guy and a high school arm. I mean, for whatever normal risks typically come with high school pitchers, he doesn't have a lot of that. He's like wildly polished. But it still seemed like a risk within the top 4. But then Detroit just kind of lasered in on him, so that part wasn't a surprise. So after Leiter went number 2, I was just kind of like, holy crap. I think the Red Sox are going to get the best player in the draft.
Right. I know. That was it unfolded quickly after you spend months reading all of these things and just all went haywire in 5 minutes. Kevin, did you have any additional thoughts about, and I know that this was today, Judd Fabian went in the second round from Florida. Didn't know if you had any thoughts about the draft or any players that you're looking forward to seeing beyond that. Might be kind of an on-the-fly question for you, as I know the draft was earlier today.
I watched only last night, right? I did not see yesterday or today. But no, Mayer's, I'm super excited about him. I think he's, I mean, he had a grand slam in his last high school at bat. I think that's pretty cool. He looks like that guy from Succession. I know that.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that it from? I haven't even seen the show, but I saw so many photos about it. The comparison.
Jamie Strong, I think.
Yeah, look it up. It's
Jeremy Strong? Jamie Strong? Shoot.
I don't know, but it's identical.
I know the guy you're talking about.
Yeah, it's identical. That's my expert take on that.
Well, I need to do more Googling, clearly. I thought I could get that in 10 seconds, but I couldn't. Before we get on, we're going to ask you about a couple of rules changes and how they have affected single A so far, or low A. Do you have a best Joe Davis story? Because I've been fascinated by watching highlights and interviews with him, and I'm trying to think of the best comp, and I think of players like Matt Stairs and Rowdy Tellez and just some big dudes. But, I mean, his numbers are outstanding. He has close to, 50 RBIs, I think, in the 45 RBIs, yeah, in 45 games. So does Davis, do you think he'll jump a level? And do you have any good stories for Joe?
He's the best, isn't he? He's fun to watch. The consistency, right? It seems like he's driving in a run and has at least two hits in every game.
Right.
I know I'm actually interviewing him this week too, so I'll interview him tomorrow, and that'll go up on our site later this week. But I have a couple stories. So he actually fixes up trucks during quarantine, I think he did. So we'll talk about that in our interview, and I'll actually ask this question about his comparisons to Rowdy Tellez and Matt Stairs. I want to see who he compares himself to, because I haven't asked him that question yet.
Yeah, I was trying to think of some names without being offensive or anything. You know, he's a big, strong dude. That's all it is.
Here's a story. So we had rain was coming into the area when we started the game. I think it was 7 o'clock game, and blew it. I think the game got delayed in about the bottom of the third, and it was 2-hour and 15-minute rain delay. And we stranded runners on first and third with one out, came back, we're down three runs. Joe Davis is the first guy who comes up. First pitch, blast went over the center field wall. Didn't end there, though. He hit 2 3-run homers in that game. And, I mean, he's just a fan favorite, right? You can tell. He's a guy who charms the fans day in, day out with his bat and that smile. So, you know what? I'm going to ask him about the comparisons on tomorrow. So
he'll mix in a good mustache every now and then too, I've seen.
And in terms of him getting promoted, I mean, you know, I think guys like Jax Groshans, projectable pitchers, Brandon Walter, we've seen that. You know, they definitely have their eye on Joe Davis, but it's obvious that there's some talent in front of him over at that first base spot in Greenville. So it's, you know, it's tough, but his success has been awesome to watch.
Major League Baseball is trying out a bunch of different rule changes throughout the minors this year. The one that you're seeing at your level is the 2 pickoff attempts per batter. What has that been like? And have you noticed any changes, and how was that received by the pitchers?
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit before we came on. To be honest, it hasn't made much of a difference in terms of the base running. I think we just have, you know, fast guys. We mentioned Nick York, Zidane Rafaela, Gilberto Jimenez, and these are guys who can just steal bags. We mentioned that Luke Montz likes to put on the hit and run a whole lot. So I don't think the limit to pickovers over to first has increased our base stealing ability. But I do think that our guys like to run, and Luke lets them run.
Yeah, and to put some context with that, Rafaela has 16 steals and Matthew Lugo has 12, Gilberto Jimenez has 10, and Nick York has 9. So, and I do know at that level, sometimes there's some shakier catching arms, and in general, you see some inflated stolen base totals sometimes with, you know, a player might have 40 grade speed and still be in double digits or something along those lines. But, you know, the rules changes going into the season were they increase the size of the bases at one of the levels, and I know they were adjusting shifts and robot umps and just different things that you're seeing at different levels. So we weren't sure whether it had a major change in the game, but it sounded like it didn't.
And these are great too, these changes made at the minor league levels to just try things out. And I like how they're making a different change to every level or a different part or a different league in the level, so that it's almost an experiment, right? To find out, you know, which works and how each changes the game, and that was started right by the Atlantic League. So I think the changes they're making at our level are good and good for the game.
Yeah, it sounds like Theo Epstein has some ideas, and that he was behind a lot of this. It was interesting reading kind of his thoughts, and he just wants to see the ball in play more often, which I think is between that and the pitch clock that I would love to see make its way up to the major leagues, because you go to a minor league game and it's just night and day compared to what we see at Fenway Park. So I think all of this will be good, you know, just like you said, test these things out in the minor leagues. and determine what works before you move the mound back or do something super drastic, you know.
Great. Well, is there anything else you want to wrap up about Salem, or anything else you want to plug before we let you go?
I'm good. We have the I present Sox Talks on our website, so episodes 3, 4, and 5 will be coming out this week. So I'll put that on my Twitter at KD205 as well. And you can follow me as well for any Salem Red Sox updates. We're 4 back right now, so if you guys care about standings, we're 4 back of the Delmarva Shorebirds, so we're in the running of something here. So,
are they doing any playoffs this year, or have they reconsidered that? Because it sounded like it wasn't going to happen, at least when the season was starting.
Yeah, it's I think it's up in the air right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see.
All right.
Well, Kevin DiDomenico, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure. Had fun.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Thank you so much for Kevin DiDomenico helping us out, giving us a nice look out on the farm. Great guest. Check out his Twitter and check out those Sox Talk videos. Get some insight into some of the Red Sox prospects down there. Moving on to your regularly scheduled content, first half review. The Boston Red Sox currently sit number one atop the AL East, a game and a half ahead of the Tampa Bay Rays. 8 up on both the Blue Jays and the Yankees, and 26 ahead of the Orioles. Bob, this is a little bit better than I had predicted in the preseason. I had predicted them to be about a 500 team, and they are throwing it in my face. How have they performed so far to your preseason expectations?
Oh, I had them on pace for 100-plus wins, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I expected them, I did expect over 500. I was more in like that 84, 85 win range because I felt that Cora made such a huge difference and would make a huge difference in how hard the players play with him and how well he communicates. And just generally compared to, you know, no disrespect to Renicky, but I wasn't even sure if he was alive in the dugout half the time last year. So I felt that he was going to be a difference of, you know, 5 games by himself. And I think that he has been that. You forget how good it was to have Cora around. And you understand, you know, everything that unfolded and he did his time, but he's back and he's working the umpires and he's, you know, supporting the veterans. And you can just kind of tell that he has such a huge difference. And I feel like he takes the pitcher out at the right time most of the time. So no, I didn't see them tied for the best record in the American League, you know, within percentage points of the White Sox and the Astros. They're all pretty much right in the same spot. So yeah, I mean, I thought their window, and I think Chaim Bloom probably thinks their window starts next year, especially when they can get back above the tax and spend some free agent money and get some things cleared off the books. But this is just playing with house money right now.
That is a great way to describe it. That's exactly how I feel. Not to say that I think that the team will fade. I think it is strong enough. The pitching has obviously been both the bullpen and the starting pitching has been the biggest story of the season. The bullpen being one of the best in Major League Baseball after being one of the worst for so long was not something that I foresaw. But man, does it feel good to have guys at the back end of the game that can come in and close it out, and you don't have to, you know, hold your seat every time they come in.
Yeah, and it's a good point. I mean, if you talk about what has surprised most in terms of, you know, different aspects of the team, certainly it's starting pitching, and we have hopefully a boost, a certain player that's going on a rehab assignment that will make it even better, but also the defense, you know, the outfield defense and some of the montages we've seen out there over the last week since they made about 8 throws on the West Coast trip that were all incredible between Renfro and Kike, which the best of the bunch might have been the one on the walk-off sac fly where he was seemingly almost at the warning track and still threw a one hopper to the plate. You know, the teams need to learn to stop running on these guys, and even JD is throwing his hat in there with a couple of throws. So that has been, I mean, certainly the rotation, but just the defense, especially in the outfield. Kike making a couple diving catches earlier this week. So that's blown me away more than anything, is just how they've tightened things up out there.
Something else that's been kind of underrated to me is the health of the starting pitching. With the exception of Eduardo Rodriguez joining, you know, a couple weeks late, it's been the same 5 guys the whole year. And given the rate at which we're seeing injuries across the league this year, that seems absolutely wild. That coupled with the guys in the rotation have significant injury histories all to their own, and they've been able to avoid it, be healthy, and that's led to a tremendous amount of success from the starters.
Yeah, and they've needed it with all of the injuries in the minor leagues. And I don't really trust anyone they have up there like Andrees to make a spot start. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, they've needed those guys to be out there every fifth day. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it's the 2 Houck starts early on. And I was thinking it's kind of reminiscent of the 2013 team. Not only that they have seemingly overachieved, I think we would all agree with that, not to say that there's a fall off coming, but beyond expectations. But that team in 2013, everybody was taking the ball every fifth day between Lester and Lackey and Dempster, Felix Dubron, Peavy. There you go. Yeah. And yeah, down the stretch, Peavy gave them some good starts, and they didn't have any injuries that year. So yeah, knock on wood, but that's such an important thing. And like you said, with injuries across the league and then also how few innings everybody threw last year, I think they will adjust that a little bit. It sounds like Houck will come up, maybe do a 6-man rotation for these 18 games against the AL East teams coming up and try to get some outings out of Houck, and keep, because you have to think, unless there is a colossal collapse, they are 7-8 games ahead of the second wild card spot. I mean, even beyond looking at the division. So they have to keep the innings in check and look forward to October while still trying to win the division and avoiding a 1-game wild card.
Yeah. So let's get into a bit of a review. Every preseason and postseason, we do some superlatives for the team. So we'll do some midseason check-ins on that now, and Bob and I will go through our superlatives for the first half of the season, starting with MVP. Bob, who'd you pick?
Pick JD Martinez. This was a tough one. There are so many, and so many in the lineup, but JD set the tone, and he carried them, especially through April. I mean, he was at a record-setting pace in April, and slowed down a little bit, but just looking, I mean, his weighted runs created plus is 145 still, even with falling off a little bit there. He's got the 18 home runs. He's walking 10.5% of the time in 84 games. He's been on the field. He has played outfield for them when they've needed to give players an off day. He's hitting 300. You know, I think that there's 3 MVP names that you could easily make a case for, but especially with just where things were at with JD and almost wondering, you know, would they be better off if he opted out after the season last year? I mean, you can tell that the comments about the video review that they're now able to do again, and you heard Ortiz talk about that, in passing a little bit, like, yeah, if I didn't have that, I wouldn't have been the hitter that I am. And so many players kind of back JD up about that. Obviously, that was really important to him. And at 33 years old, he is making a case for himself to continue to get paid the way that he is for several more years.
Yeah, it's a great pick. There's a lot of guys, like you said, that could kind of fall into this MVP category, which is a great thing for the Red Sox to have. I went with Rafael Devers, who for the first time really didn't get off to a slow start, kind of hit the ground running, and we're kind of seeing like what his ceiling can be when he is like as strong as he can be for an entire season. 22 homers so far. He's walking the most that he ever has in his career, striking out the least. And, you know, Jake in the preseason predicted that Devers would be in like top three in MVP at the end of the year for the voting for the award. And I don't think he's that far off from it, especially if he has a second half like he has had this first half. I mean, he'd be pushing close to 40 homers with hitting close to 290, 300. That's just a massive amount of talent. So
his defense, I went too.
And his defense massively improved to the point where he's a very positive defensive rating, which is something that last season he was, by Fangraphs, Mark, was -5. And he's +3 right now, which is such a massive swing in a short amount of time. You know, he started off the year, you know, we've seen him kind of like when he's struggling at the plate, he struggles on the field, and they kind of feed off each other. And his whole game either is going really well or can kind of go poorly. And he started off through the first series, I think he had 3 errors, and it looked like it was going to be another really slow defensive start. But he fixed that, all of those issues, incredibly quickly. And now to go from I think at his lowest, he was close to -4 at some point during the season. Now he's turned that all the way around. Really impressive to see all facets of his game.
Seems to play his way into shape more than anyone else on the team. If you look at the OPSs, Keaton, Xander's at .930, JD is at .926, and Devers is at .913. I mean, flip a three-sided coin for who your MVP is.
Yeah, exactly. Next one is best pitcher. Who is your pick for best pitcher?
I'm going to go with Nate Eovaldi. I mean, he's their starting pitcher, all-star. He's thrown 103 innings, 9-5 with a 3.66 ERA. He's had a couple of blow-ups, and there's some games where he gives up a ton of hits. But, you know, 2 Tommy John surgeries and a huge contract that at times seemed like it was a reward for past performance for what he did in the playoffs a few years back in 2018 in their World Series season. And it was hard to justify the contract at times. And he has done that and more this year. He's got a whip of 1.23. He's striking batters out at a decent clip, you know, not overpowering for someone that throws as hard as he does, but he's just going deep into games. Some of the games that he threw with Connor Wong, which is kind of a sneaky aspect of things there, that every time Wong catches him, he's going 7-8 innings into the game. I think he's the main one that I look at, though, that they need to keep his innings in check at 103 right now. We don't want him hovering near 200, especially since he's throwing in the All-Star game. So I'm hoping maybe that he's, you know, fourth, fifth pitcher out of the break. I'm not sure if they've totally set that in stone yet, but I'd like to see them keep him closer to 180, 190 because they're going to need him in October.
Yeah, and that's kind of another piece that feels like it's playing with house money is all of these guys are like on pace to pitch the most innings that they have in like 5 years, with the exception of Erod, who, you know, just got over 200 kind of recently. So that managing everybody's injuries and things like that is going to be real big over the last, you know, 40, whatever we have, however many games, way more than 40, like 70 games. My pick for best pitcher was Matt Barnes, who I'll talk about in another section of this. Matt Barnes finally figured out how to not walk batters, and we are seeing the fruits of that success blossom. We talked a lot about the need for a back-end pitcher for the bullpen and how we didn't think Matt Barnes was likely to be that guy. Leading over the last 3 seasons, leading the Major League Baseball in blown saves. And all that is behind him, and he has pitched far beyond any of my expectations, for sure. With a K per nine at like 15, that's like Chapman hater levels. That's just wild. And then to pair that with a 2.5 walk rate is incredible for a reliever. And I mean, to think the past 2 years, that's half as many walks per nine as he's had the last 2 years. And it was 4.5, you know, 3 years ago. So just the massive amounts of improvement that he's made there and seeing the success is, you know, completely locked down the back end. And we don't really feel worried when he comes in to save a game. And we know that, you know, he's got it locked up, which is a great
feeling. Cashed in on that, too.
Yeah, exactly. We're getting the extension for sure. Next up is Defensive Wizard. Who is your pick for Defensive Wizard?
I'm going to go with Hunter Renfro. What I have to pick an outfielder after the way that I was just talking them up. But Renfro, both with the glove and with the arm, and watching him throw from the outfield, it doesn't matter if he's going left or right, back or forward, and where the runner's going, he's got the arm to make the throw, regardless of which way that his momentum is taking him. I've been amazed by the throws that he's made this year. He's made some nice catches. You know, just such a big dude and has the power behind it to make those throws. This is another spot where there's not an obvious candidate, but you know, especially in the outfield, but I'm going to go with Renfro.
Yeah, there is a few that you could have picked. I went with Verdugo because that's who I had picked in the beginning of the season. But I don't think Renfro is a bad pick there either. I mean, at one point, Renfro and Verdugo were 1-2 in the American League MLB in outfield assists. And the plays that they've been making, Verdugo's had a couple really nice diving catches recently. As well as gunning guys out around the base paths. The outfield defense of the Red Sox has been another one of those really underrated pieces of the team's success. And so I definitely feel the same as you. I had to go with an outfielder there and went with Verdugo. He was just my preseason pick there.
But great choice.
Renfro was a great pick there, too. Biggest surprise, positive. Who'd you go with?
I'm going to go with Nick Pivetta. You know, coming into the season, I didn't have the highest expectations for Pivetta. I thought he may or may not be the guy that we would be waiting on Sale to come back. And now I think he might be the second best starter, or at least he has been so far. 7-4 with a 4.30. He's the one whose strikeout rate has been excellent. You know, 10.6 per nine, struck out 113 in 96 innings. And before his last outing, I mean, he had the no-hitter into the sixth or seventh, and then he had another outing through seven innings, and he's just been going more and more deep into games. I think early in the year, I was just like, get to five, you know, try to get to five, get the win, and he was grinding through certain games. But I think the season really picked up a notch for him when he beat DeGrom against the Mets. I mean, he went toe-to-toe for him, and I feel like he mentally felt that he was as good as DeGrom when he stepped on the mound that day. I mean, he's got such an edge to him on the field, off the field. He's been a really pleasant surprise, and what a ripoff of a trade that was, getting Pivetta for the relievers, and then one of the relievers is back. And I think, what was it, Hembry and Workman, right? Workman's
back.
Workman's
back with the Red Sox, and Hembry's now the closer for the Reds and hasn't given up a run in like 14 appearances.
Yeah. So let me know who saw it unfolding that way. Everybody is just nowhere near where we were expecting them to be when that trade was made last August. So shout out to Josh Taylor, though, because I was ready to release him week into the season when I know he didn't pitch a whole lot last year, but he got hit around like no one you'd see all year in those first three appearances, and then going 20 some odd appearances without allowing a run. So Taylor has been the biggest surprise for me since the first week of the year.
Honestly, this one was like the hardest superlative to pick because there are so many guys who are like outperforming my expectations.
Yeah.
That it was hard. But I went back to Matt Barnes here because I had zero faith in his ability to close out a game, and he's completely shoved it in my face. And every time he comes out, now I don't worry about the game being in the balance. He's been that kind of shut down closer, and his curveball has just been stupid filthy all year. So that was a big surprise for me. Moving on to the bummer part, biggest disappointment. Who is your choice for that?
Yeah, and I'll apologize in advance, but it's Garrett Richards. I'm sorry, Keaton. And I know I was messaging you from Fenway the other night after he gave up a triple and a double to open the game, and I wanted him out the win. First. He got the win. He fought through it, and I managed to have a great time. So the it's just I feel like he might get dealt in a couple of weeks, maybe to the National League for a middling prospect or something. But he has fought after they made the changes with the sticky stuff and the baseball. Just seemed like a lot of complaining. He was complaining about the cold weather early in the year, and then he was too sweaty in a different outing, and then the ball and all of that. And the stats, he's got a 4.91 ERA and a 1.68 whip, which is pretty alarming in my opinion. So I just have not enjoyed the Garrett Richards experience.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Tell me I'm wrong. I mean, well, you're not. But unfortunately, there was also like multiple candidates that could be picked for this one. I went with the one that hurts the most, and Eduardo Rodriguez. Even coming off of all of his troubles with missing 2020 and coming back from COVID and all of the struggles that he had, you know, he was healthy, or at least reported to be healthy very early on in the offseason, had a full offseason of just his normal routine. And we were really looking for him to build on the success that he had in 2019. And it's been a big struggle. It has been a lot better recently. His ERA is now under 6. And his FIP and XFIP are significantly better than his 5.52 ERA suggests. So I know almost every single time he has an outing, Jerry Remy talks about how he's just been unlucky. There's probably a little bit of truth to that. But at least he does also have the highest BABIP of his career. But it's also, you know, him needing to perform. And he just kind of hasn't been able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, the BABIP's going to be high when you're leaving balls in the middle of the plate. I think I really did think the last four starts before the break that he looked a lot better. The last one wasn't great, but he gave up some bloopers in the first inning. And I thought the first five or so innings he pitched well before he gave up the two home runs and ended up giving up four in that game, I think. But before that, he had three quality starts in a row. And I want to say it was the Oakland game, one of the ones out on the West Coast, where he was hitting spots. I felt like he was hitting all four corners and looked like E-Rod again. So we'll see. I think that's a good choice. 5.52 ERA, it's hard to argue with that. But he has gotten a little bit unlucky, and I think he looked better going into the break, and that he's going to have a lot better second half.
Yeah, it's certainly trending in a good direction for him. Yep. And lastly, for our superlatives, unsung hero, who'd you pick?
I'm going to go with Christian Arroyo, and mainly just the number of clutch hits that he had, pinch hit appearances, grand slams, you know, just fired up crossing home plate. Some of the best bat flips I've seen in this town in a long time. I've loved watching Arroyo, and I knew I was glad that he made the team, and I was glad that he could be kind of a bench player for them, but I didn't realize how clutch he was going to be. I don't know if anybody was expecting him to be that clutch that he gets up late in games, and he's the player that you want up there as much as anybody, because you just have it fresh in your head that, wow, he got a huge hit, and there's another one. He did it probably 5 times in a 2-week span, went on the IL, and then his first at-bat off the IL, he homered again. So he's had such a kind of a small sample size because of the injuries, and it seems like he's a magnet just getting hit by pitches all the time and has ended up on the IL a couple of different times. But when he's out there, it just seems like he's had all of the big hits this season. Well, he's played in 47 games, right? But he's hitting .264, and he's got 5 homers, and I think they've all been clutch.
Yeah, a lot of big hits from him. I went with Garrett Whitlock.
Yeah.
Garrett Whitlock is a guy that we weren't expecting a whole lot from, being a Rule 5 guy. We knew he was going to be around on the roster. had a really hot spring, which gave us a lot of hope, and he's just kind of kept that going. He's been used in a whole bunch of different ways. He's been used as a long reliever to spell guys with short outings. He's come in high leverage situation. He's even gotten a save, and he's just pretty much dominated the entire time.
From day one.
1.44 ERA. He doesn't walk people. K per nine, almost 10. It's just been wildly impressive. And the, Alex Cora, we know, loves those utility guys in the field, can move them around. But he also loves that role with the bullpen as well. And we've talked a lot about finding that, like, Andrew Miller, Josh Hader type guy. And I think they found it. I think this is the guy. Every time he comes in, it ends up being, in some form or fashion, big innings, and he powers through them and comes out on top. So it's just, I can't talk enough about the bullpen, which is, we've talked significant amount about how bad they've been, and now I feel like I need to just as much talk about how good they've been, because they really have been tremendous, and he's been a huge part of it.
Yeah, I mean, if there was a playoff game tomorrow, wild card, one game playoff, who do you want pitching the eighth ahead of Barnes?
Yeah,
it's Whitlock for me.
Yeah.
And
surprisingly, Josh Taylor.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And Ottavino's been very good, but I don't know. I trust Whitlock more than just about anybody.
Yeah, it's all about the consistency, right? Like, Josh Taylor has been really inconsistent. He's been really bad, and he's been really freaking good. Same with Ottavino and Darwin's and Hernandez. But the two most consistent have been Whitlock and Barnes.
Yep. With you.
All right. Some other recent roster news here that we'll just hit on before we get into a touch of the draft and some listener questions. The Red Sox sent Michael Chavis down, Danny Santana, Matt Andrees to the IL, Kevin Plawecki, Austin Bryce. Chavis is back. I cut off who the person was. There was somebody else that – who did – oh my God. Connor Wong. There we go. Connor Wong sent down. Danny Santana, Matt Andrees to the IL. Chavis Plawecki back, and Austin Bryce back. What do you think about that swap? Austin Bryce for Matt Andrees. Obviously, Austin Bryce right before last game before the All-Star break got hit up a little bit there to close out that game against Philly.
Yeah, Bryce had been very good at AAA when they sent him back down. I think he'd only given up a run or two in, 10, 15 outings. Starting to feel like a very good AAA pitcher and a below-average major league pitcher. I don't think it's the worst thing if he's the last relief pitcher on your team, but, if that's Phillips Valdez or whoever that ends up being, I think that we're going to see some other names come up. Houck's going to come up. He might end up as another bullpen arm. Hopefully we see Bizzardo later on. So I think these are just names that they're going to continue to swap in and out and off of the 40-man roster and just kind of holding the bench for whoever's next.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that.
I don't miss Matt Andrees, though. I don't know if it was a hamstring or hurt feelings that they put him on the IL with.
Yeah. Moving on to the draft. Bob and Shelley are going to do a more in-depth look, so we'll just kind of touch on this. We got a listener question, which is basically what I was going to ask Bob anyway. Listener question of the most intriguing guy drafted, not name Marcelo or Judd. For me, this is their fifth-round pick, Nathan Hickey. He is a catcher from Florida, a sophomore at Florida. I do not believe he is going to stay a catcher, and most of the scouting reports also say that. However, his comp is really interesting, and it's Kyle Schwarber, who won a World Series with the Cubs, hit like 17 home runs in June for the Nationals this year before pulling a hamstring. But Schwarber was also a catcher, but was just too bulky to remain at the position. Same thing with Hickey, but he has really tremendous raw power as well as some swing and miss to him. But I think if he can basically follow that Schwarber projection and become that kind of hitter, that's a really intriguing guy to have in your lineup every day and probably a great future DH. So that one is interesting to me just for the excitement of the power. Definitely not staying a catcher, but still an interesting bat for them to grab. So that was the guy that stuck out to me.
Yeah, and even beyond that power, I saw he had 42 walks to 20 strikeouts, 435 on base percentage. I mean, they must have, I think Fabian kind of fell in their laps a little bit, but they must have liked what they saw when they were scouting Florida this year.
Yeah, no kidding. Do you have anybody?
Yeah, no, that was mine so far. I need to dive into this a lot more than I have. But like you said, it's going to be Shelley and I will be talking about this, and we've got one more day with the remaining 10 rounds. I guess kind of with the start of the draft, I would think it would be difficult to draw it up any better than they did. You know, not to discredit Bloom in any way, but Mayer and Fabian are just, to me, they were no-brainer picks in both spots. I was surprised that both players were there. And I was ecstatic last night, being Sunday, and I was ecstatic this afternoon when I saw both of those players there. And, you know, I know Fabian had some swing and miss a little bit early in the season, but seemed like he was back to himself later in the year. And, you know, hopefully they can sign both of these guys. I imagine that they would if they took them in those Fabian in that spot that they plan on, even if they need to go a little bit over slot with him. But I was pumped with both of those picks.
And we have one other draft-related question from Paul Richter, who said, am I the only one who thinks it's weird they've only picked one pitcher thus far? And I'm assuming that was round six or so when that question was sent. They finished the last four rounds picking three pitchers. But I was not. I mean, this is baseball is so much different than every other sport, and these guys are a minimum 2 years closer to maybe 5 years away from actually getting to the majors. So the Red Sox need pitching, but I would expect them to fill that through either trades or free agency and not through the draft. Because any of the guys that were picked, there's no way they would be there soon. And by the time these guys get close to the majors or about to make their debut, pitching may not be needed anymore. So,
yeah, and even the pitcher that they had taken when we got that was Puerto Rican Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, I think that was the fourth round, maybe, who's still 17 years old. So, yeah, and you have the J2 selections that you can supplement that with. And so much of this, the rounds kind of get interchangeable. You know, the 8th, 9th, and 10th round pitchers that you mentioned that they took three more of them today. You know, it a lot of times it just depends on the slot, and it depends on what you have to pay these players and split that money up between 20 rounds. So it's harder to totally understand when or why they take players at the times that they do. But I think when all is said and done, they'll probably have pretty good split between hitters and pitchers, and then you'll have the off season to have the international players as well, which I think normally is in July, but it's once again going to be in the winter this year.
Great point. I hadn't even mentioned the international piece. Let's get into the rest of the listener questions first. Damian Didin? Sorry if I'm jacking that up.
Sure.
Is there anything not to like about Chaim Bloom at this point? He's shown skill at finding bargains at the major league and in the draft, shown the willingness to go big in the draft this year, and willingness to extend the team's veteran stars. Do we have Andrew Friedman 2.0 here? Well, that was the hope, right? Going to Tampa and getting a Friedman protege. I think the only thing left is you know, landing a whale this offseason when they deem they have the money to do so. It was an uphill battle for Bloom because the very first move was trading away once in a generation talent, huge fan favorite that people didn't want to leave. And so from then on, all of his moves were going to get overly scrutinized and judged. But Jake and I have both said on this podcast repeatedly that this upcoming offseason is the ones that we're really going to judge him, knowing his circumstances coming into it. They reset. They're not going to go over this year. And just the plethora of talent that's available this offseason. If they have a repeat offseason where they're just adding ancillary pieces and they don't land a whale, I'll start to get frustrated. But certainly has been right on par with what my expectations and hope would be.
Yeah, I think I was saying earlier just about considering this season that he's playing with house money, because I don't believe, I think he needed 2 years, and I think that they were, yeah, his first task was to trade Betts, and then this year was to stay under the luxury tax. So it's like, how much can you do with that amount of money? I mean, he's done as much as he can with these $5, $6, $8 million players that he was able to sign in the offseason. I think that very sneakily, the minor league system is double the depth that we had a year ago. I think there's a long way to go with that to get to, you know, Andrew Friedman level, where you feel like you always have someone to supplement the player that is in the major leagues if you have an injury or if someone leaves in free agency, which they've continued to be able to do. But yeah, you look at LA and Tampa Bay as, I mean, different amount of money that they spend, but you know, kind of similar farm systems, and that you just keep seeing one thing after another, one player after another that can replace somebody if there is an injury or a trade or anything like that. So, yeah, I think you got to give him 2 years, and you have to give him free agency this year going into next year. But who knows? I mean, he might already have built something for 2021. So outside of the, and love the Benintendi trade, but outside of that, I think that he has followed a really good process so far.
The pesky poll, the poll itself, wants to know, when is Jeter Downs ETA to the big leagues? Is it later this season, break camp next year, later next year? What do you think?
I don't think it's this season, because I think even with, they don't have the, you know, you could say maybe he's a September call-up, but I don't even think that they can extend the rosters much beyond maybe 28 players now. So, and I think that they already need to find a spot for Duran and figure out how he meshes with that defensive outfield that we were just talking about, and make sure that he can be on that same level, which is something that has changed a little bit recently. And I just think that outfield is really on a roll. We'll see whether they still stay healthy, whether that continues. So I think Downs has showed some signs, but the fact that they're letting him play in the Olympics means I don't think a call-up is imminent, and I think it's going to be next season, but I'm not even sure if he'll break camp with the team. Ideally, yes, but he's going to have to show a lot, you know, greater strides in the second half and have a strong finish of the season and a strong training camp. I think he'll definitely be up next year, but I'm not positive that he even breaks camp, but a lot of that will depend on, you know, do they go out and sign Trevor Story and have him play second base or something to go next to Bogaerts. I think free agency will have a lot to do with that as well.
Yeah, he's had a good year at AAA, but it still has shown to be pretty tough for him. His slash line's 234, 309, 377. 7 homers, 12 steals looks really nice. 9% walk rate looks really nice, but it's a lot of swing and miss still there. 29.3% strikeout rate, which obviously is, you know, leads into the average and OBP and all those things. So I think he's still got a little bit to work on. I don't think a call-up is imminent. He probably has a chance to break camp next year. Again, like you said, they don't make a major move at second base in free agency, then I think he has a chance. But I would still say they would probably keep him down for a bit, and then it would probably be like after, you know, 2 months closer to mid-year. That'll probably be ready.
Yep.
That's what it feels like.
I'm with you.
And then our last listener question comes from Jake. So do Meyer, Casas, Downs, Fabian, Duran, York, etc. win 4 or 5 championships together when it's all said and done? Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's after today, it's got to be a dynasty, right? You know, that's just in the books at this point. I would love if there are 2 championships in the next decade. They won 2 championships in each of the last 2 decades. So, yeah, I would be very happy if they got 2 more in the 20s. So, let's go with that.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. All right. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Thanks to you, Bob, for filling in for Jake. I look forward to your and Shelly draft breakdown later this week. That'll be really fun. Listen, do you have anything else you want to plug while you're here?
Nope. You can follow me on Twitter at BobOsgood15. Thanks for letting me join today, Keaton. This was a blast.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for listening. We'll be with you again next week.